Welcome to North Shore News and Interviews on Amherst Island Radio. Each week, we keep you updated on newsworthy events, happenings, and conversations that we've had with people in the local community and beyond.
A petition with nearly 500 signatures helped Loyalist Township Council with their latest decision about the reconstruction of Main Street in Odessa. Ultimately, council voted on the option that aligns best with the petition to reinstate the existing cross-section. The report noted this option maintains the status quo for on-street parking, which was identified as an important factor by business owners and residents through project consultation. The report noted consideration will also be given to making adjustments to the existing layout around intersections in particular. Amy Dornikamp, owner of Mill Creek Vet Clinic on Main Street, spoke about the need for parking in the area, referencing surveys and public input.
While I support active living, Main Street is not the right location for a multi-use path. The 2021 Township survey showed that while 75% supported an investment in active transportation, over 65% of those respondents commute more than 10 kilometers to work, making it impractical. A county survey completed in the last couple of months found that 81% of the respondents said a multi-use path would not benefit them more than parking. The community has spoken. And their priorities are clear. Parking remains a greater need than a multi-use path in this location.
David Savage, owner of Odessa Home Hardware, mentioned the petition and the customers he spoke with, noting the history of the store and importance of parking.
We garnered about 500 names, and all our customers that we spoke to thought it was not a wise decision. And, you know, we've been in the business, we've been in the village now since 1938 in the same location. To remove the parking on that side of the street or anywhere on Main Street would be devastating to any small current business or prospective business.
Dornikamp speaks about the existing shared parking and the potential of losing business.
There are only 5 spots on the opposite side of Main Street between Factory Street and Center Street. And those are already shared by the church, Home Hardware, my clinic, the bank, and the residents in that area. This is not enough parking. If clients struggle to park, they'll go elsewhere. And with 8 other vet clinics within a 15-minute drive, I'm deeply concerned we'll lose both current and prospective clients.
Engineering and Environment Manager Luke McDonald detailed the other options and why none of them were perfect.
There's no sort of slam dunk alternative to this. Each option has their trade-offs that are associated with it. The Force Main crossing, there's no existing crossing there now. So that would require work in water. That would require a number of permits from MNRF, CRCA, so on. So the cost would be considerably higher, as well as just establishing a new structural culvert crossing. The other option, while it may be less costly overall, there are significant concerns with the environmental condition of the property that the Babcock Mill rear yard is onto. Just some of the historic uses could lend itself potentially to contamination or things like that.
Councillor Paul Proderick addressed public concerns and noted the history of Odessa.
I appreciate Ms. Dornikamp's comment about the number of veterinary clinics being within a 15-minute drive. And we don't think of that, but it is. And again, it's the same for the hardware store. There's so many places within an easy access point. And I think when I go back, we've got an 1880s village that my grandparents came to on horse and buggy with 2025 traffic problems. And I don't think we can reconcile the multi-use pathways. I think we have to protect the businesses, protect the parking for that area.
Proderick also mentioned the concerns of cyclists in the area.
With the multi-use pathway, and I'm thinking of the cycling side of it, and I talked to a few who I would call hardcore cyclists who have told me things like they don't use that road. They go back Millhaven Road, back roads. And a couple of residents, and I was asking them about, you know, you have kids that age. He said, no, we don't want them on highway, they call Highway 2. And I also, on one visit, I stood just across from the veterinary clinic and the home hardware. And it was probably 35 cars that went by in less than 5 minutes. It's not the right location. I go back to the glory days of the Ernestown Eagles in the late 70s, and it's changed so much, Odessa. We can't cut off business growth. Odessa, I think, is in a bit of a renaissance, and the veterinary clinic, different things are coming back into the village. And you know, without the parking, it's a choke for them, I think.
Dornekamp noted the importance of Odessa's current needs.
This isn't about resisting progress. It's about being smart, practical, and responsive to the needs of our township to keep Main Street functional, accessible, and true to the spirit of Odessa.
Township staff will now begin to explore alternative connectivity routes surrounding the Babcock Mill, Factory Street, and Shane Street. The report notes that unless directed by council, staff would not consider these projects a priority. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Warden of Lennox and Addington County, Nathan Townend, was part of signing a memorandum of understanding that advocates for continued free trade and bilateral cooperation between Canada and the U.S. The agreement was made between the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus and the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Townend spoke about his time at the conference in Milwaukee.
Whilst I was there, I was able to join Chair Bonnie Clark of EOWC and fellow Warden Brian Ostrander of Northumberland County as we signed an MOU between the EOWC and the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Frankly, it was an inspiring conference, made me very proud to be a municipal politician. As is often the case, you know, municipalities are the ones that's moving the dial on the key economic and environmental challenges we face, and that the commitments are shared on both sides of the border.
Townend noted the work of the initiative and spoke about the focus of this year's conference.
Given the importance of economic and environmental solidarity across the Great Lakes region, particularly at this tumultuous time, and particularly because the EOWC is providing leadership in this regard. So the organization does work to protect and advocate for the environmental and economic vitality of the millions of Canadians, Americans, and First Nations who live within the watersheds of what is the largest freshwater system on Earth, 21% of the world's freshwater resources right here. So this year's conference was focused on equitable and sustainable management of clean freshwater in a time of scarcity. And it was felt by all the conference that now more than ever, bilateral cooperation between Canada and the United States must be strengthened.
Townend also spoke about separate meetings with the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus in Toronto.
I was joined by warden colleagues from across our region in the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus, held Advocacy Day at Queen's Park. They were very productive meetings, which culminated in a multi-minister delegation with the Premier. So these meetings give the EOWC an opportunity to share regional priorities with decision makers across government and the legislature. And they also provide an opportunity for us to hear firsthand what the government's priorities are and how municipalities feature as partners. Obviously, that's important considering we've just had an election.
Townend presented this information as part of his warden's report at this week's council meeting. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. It was a close 4-3 vote in favor of a proposed ward boundary update at Loyalist Township's latest council meeting. The three opposing members voiced concerns about fair representation and extreme population disparity. At a special committee of the whole meeting last month, it was a 4-3 vote as well. After much discussion, option one was chosen and brought to council. This option will see the division of the existing three wards into five new wards. The new configuration includes Amherst Island as its own ward, although its population is only around 450 people. Councillor Jake Ennis made note of this while speaking about population disparity.
It's well established that a variance of up to 25% can be appropriate for good reason, perhaps up to 33% in some municipal OLT decisions. Here it's 500% plus. If this bylaw stands, I think it would set a problematic precedent. If 919 people in one ward versus over 5,000 people in other wards is okay, when does the disparity ever become not okay?
Ennis spoke about different views towards each option.
In my view, those supportive of this motion are okay with mixing rural mainlanders and urban mainlanders in one ward, but are not okay with mixing islanders and mainlanders in one ward. Why? I'm not sure. My view is that those supportive of this option erred in their focus on this community versus that community, where instead the main focus, in my view, should have been on each person in Loyalist and each person's charter right to relative equality of voting power and effective representation.
While reviewing options, staff noted they were looking to evaluate the current electoral arrangements, including how council representatives are elected, existing ward boundaries, and overall council composition. Staff's original report noted a key objective was to support anticipated growth over the next three municipal election cycles. More information and an interactive map are available on the township's website. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township is proclaiming June as Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month. The Greater Kingston Victorian Order of Nurses approached Township Council with a proclamation request. The organization offers community support programs for seniors and persons with disabilities. Their stroke services programs offer free non-medical support to individuals and families affected by stroke and aphasia. There are monthly groups held in Sydenham, Kingston, and Napanee. Social worker and coordinator of stroke services with the Greater Kingston Victorian Order of Nurses, Amelia Leslie, notes the importance of awareness, highlighting statistics in Canada.
We have over 108,000 new strokes in Canada annually, with over 800,000 Canadians living with the effects of stroke, and stroke does happen every 5 minutes in Canada.
The organization encourages community members to recognize the warning signs of a stroke and to immediately call 911. They're also encouraging people to learn about aphasia and how to promote accessible communication. Leslie explains the medical conditions.
Stroke being a neurological condition affecting the disruption of blood flow in the brain. And because the brains are control center of everything, anything can be affected. When we talk about aphasia, it's a language and communication disorder affecting our ability to read or write or produce speech or understand speech, but not affecting our intelligence.
Leslie mentions the need for communication accessibility and the awareness of it as well.
We're often teaching the community about what's called accessible communication strategies. We think about accessibility as far as physical space, maybe having a ramp or an automatic door button, but we are also teaching folks about the communication accessibility.
Leslie notes the importance of Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month in all communities.
We work all year to raise awareness about these neurological conditions, and June is Stroke and Aphasia Awareness Month in Canada. So we're especially inviting our communities to learn what stroke and aphasia are and how to help.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township Council recognized the work of volunteers who ran local outdoor rinks this winter. 9 individuals were given certificates for their efforts in setting up and maintaining the rinks. Under the township's Community Outdoor Rinks program, 3 rinks operated for a total of 53 days this past season. There was the rink at Skater Park in Odessa, a rink in front of Bath Public School, and a rink in Amherst View. Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the weather conditions and the work of volunteers.
This was our second year with the Community Outdoor Rink program and our first year with weather that cooperated to allow for 3 skatable outdoor rinks in our community. Thanks to the hard work and dedication of our volunteers, the rinks were open for an incredible 53 days and were enjoyed frequently. That means 53 days of hard work for everybody that volunteered. That's pretty amazing.
Hagedorn spoke about the local impact of the rinks.
These teams of dedicated volunteers built and maintained ice daily, giving residents of all ages a safe and fun place to skate, play hockey, and enjoy the outdoors. Their efforts created more than just rinks. They built spaces for connection, activity, and community spirit during the coldest months of the year.
Hagedorn thanked the volunteers directly.
I'd like to extend our sincere thanks to the volunteers behind the past winter's Community Outdoor Rink season. On behalf of Council, thank you for your time and commitment. Thank you again for making this winter one to remember.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. A new water pollution control plant upgrade and replacement project in Napanee is underway. Greater Napanee Council approved a contract with Peak Construction for nearly $75.5 million. The overall project cost is nearly $88 million, with $34.8 million in funding coming from the province and another $14 million from the federal government. Between that funding and the town's reserves, it leaves $25 million to be funded through loans. Staff noted a total of $5.5 million in contingencies, with $4 million of it built into tender pricing as an allowance for tariffs. Mayor Terry Richardson spoke about the scale of the project.
I know folks out there are going to say, oh, it's $25 million affordable, but an affordable way of getting this municipality into the future. I've said it many times that, you know, this is the largest purchase, largest investment we've made in this municipality in 170 years. And there are a lot of other municipalities I think would be wishing they were in the position that we are right now.
Richardson noted the importance of the funding they received.
Yes, $25 million is a lot of money to take a loan out on, but it is our future. We couldn't do it without the help of our partners, of our federal partners, and maybe more importantly, our provincial partners, who I couldn't imagine having this conversation if we didn't have the funding that we received to get us where we need to, because if $25 million scares you, $60 million should scare the bejumpins out of you.
General Manager of Growth and Infrastructure and Chief Building Official Michael Nobes explained why the project is needed.
We need this for the anticipated growth of the community. So we are anticipating a significant amount of both residential, commercial, and industrial growth within the urban settlement area, as well as modest growth within the rural area. So we are anticipating additional rural growth that would have the need for sewage disposal through septic tank disposal. So that is being planned for in the design and throughout the construction of the project.
Richardson noted how important the future of the town is, referencing all the work done in the past.
There can't be a Band-Aid left in this country because they put them all on this wastewater treatment plan to get us to where we are today. And there just isn't any left. It's worn out. It needs to be replaced. And again, it is our future. This is the future of our municipality right here. And I know it sounds really kind of strange and weird that we should be excited about a wastewater treatment plant, but we really should, because it's going to give us the future that we deserve in this municipality.
Nobes detailed the timeline for completion.
Through 2027, we would see the project continue, and midway through 2027 or towards the end of 2027 is when the commissioning of the plant would be undertaken, and through 2027, 2028 and onward, bringing the new facility up to full operation is the anticipated timeline.
Nobes spoke about the overall goals of the project and the expected location.
Replace aging infrastructure with new enhanced treatment to dramatically reduce partially treated wastewater during bypass events as a result of heavy flows entering the plant, and to provide further growth opportunities for the community through new development. The new plant would be located immediately west of the existing site and consists of new headworks, new activated granular sludge tanks, tertiary treatment UV disinfection, and an operations and control building. Ultimately, we're looking to increase the hydraulic capacity of the plant, eliminate bypassing during peak wet weather events, and to comply with the Bay Oquinny Remedial Action Plan to reduce, provide for a better effluent leaving the plant.
Staff will also be working on modernizing processes to simplify operations, improve energy efficiency, and decrease life cycle costs. The report noted the existing plant location will become available for future expansion projects when required. Nobes detailed the type of growth the new plant could support.
This new plant would provide for the capacity up to an anticipated and approximate 4,000 new homes, in addition to a mix of commercial and industrial growth. And as we see this new development proceed, the assessment growth of the municipality will ultimately grow, which helps to provide additional operating and capital revenues for the municipality for future planning. We have nearly 1,600 dwelling units approved that are either in the construction stage or are considered shovel ready. So draft plan approved, site plan approved, final plan of subdivision approved. And these units were highlighted in our funding application to the province, which helped get us the amount of funding that we ultimately did from the province. Of the 1,600 units that are approved per se, we would be looking at 16 years of build out for those.
Only pre-qualified general contractors were able to view the tender and submit a bid. For a compliant submission, the report stated all pre-qualified general contractors had to partner with pre-qualified electrical and mechanical contractors. Director of Environmental Services Christy Kelly explained the bids they received and noted who Peak Construction will be working with.
4 out of 5 of the GCs submitted bids, and all 4 were compliant. In addition to the general contractor work, Peak will utilize internal resources for the mechanical work and will be working with Sheridan Electric as their electrical contractor.
Kelly spoke about contingencies built in and noted U.S. tariffs as a main cause.
There's $4 million here that is set aside for tariffs. We all know there's some uncertainties with the way things are right now, and a lot of that pre-selected equipment is being purchased from this, the United States, so we've allowed that contingency allowance in there for such a thing.
Nobes explained staff's intentions with the contingencies.
The intent is not to use these contingencies at all, but we did want to set out a plan for council's awareness and for the community that really was as conservative as possible to take into account potential unknowns at this point.
Kelly explains why they couldn't choose Canadian options or options from other countries besides the United States.
The pre-selected equipment, including the AGS tanks specifically and or the activated granular sludge process is a United States-based process. So that was purchased, again, before the talks of these tariffs. We had to pre-select these pieces of equipment. We've certainly are working to do our best to ensure that, as I'm sure much of our country is, to purchase locally as much as possible, but a lot of these items were unfortunately only available from the United States.
Nob speaks about the expected lifetime for the new plant, touching on upgrades in the distant future, and mentioning the history of the current plant as well.
The existing plant, it was built in 1953. It's still in operation today. The actual use of it, 50 plus years, is anticipated. Routine maintenance will always be required. But we would be talking a 50 plus year design of the building. When the capacity of the plant is reached, per se, ultimately would depend on the rate at which the municipality builds out over time. So it would ultimately depend on how quickly the building permits are being pulled and homes are ultimately being built. If it's, I'd say it's worth looking back over the last few years, we're looking at in the range of 100-ish units per year, ballpark.
Nobes talks about the potential of future upgrades.
It is very straightforward to add additional cells. Adding additional cells onto the site is not going to be a challenge. It would be a matter of doing additions to the existing footprint. So it's not like we would be looking at all a brand new $80 million project again in the future. It would be a much more modest amount to add additional capacity, more or less additions onto those portions of the structure, as a lot of the headworks, the UV treatment and other buildings on the site would be able to function with these additions onto those cells.
Nobes speaks about the $34.8 million they received from the provincial government and explains the $14 million they got in 2020 from the federal government.
That was through the Canada Infrastructure Program for Ontario's allocation to the rural and northern communities infrastructure stream. We were successful with working with our local MP on getting our name pulled up the list to get that funding. And last year, we were successful in receiving provincial funding, just under $35 million. And with that, it is certainly making the project feasible. Without these contributions, we would not be in a financial state to be able to undertake this significant infrastructure project fully on our own.
Nobes highlighted staff's appearances at Roma conferences as a reason they received the funding.
I recall being with council at Roma delegations and discussions with ministers prior to submitting those applications. And I think those really helped to bring our application up in the queue in the eyes of the province. And I think it really helped get us to this point and have a good outcome with those funding applications.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Napanee's Arts Advisory Committee is taking over Music by the River, a live music series in Napanee. The committee noted they'll be scaling back to just two performances throughout 2025. Counselor and member of the Arts Advisory Committee, Bob Norrie, explained the role the committee is taking in running the event. He noted that through other venues that wouldn't affect their budget, there would be more than two performances.
We scaled it right back, or the thinking of it, to just twice, once in July, once in August, two entertainers each time. I've spoken to the sound person. He's charging the same as last year. He's been very fair. And we're looking for local talent. So we've scaled it back to just what we think is good. And we're working closely with Michelle Hauser for other venues. So there will be music down there more than just twice, but that's what the group has come to.
The committee has partnered with a company called Harmony to look after sponsorship for the event. Norrie noted the company is responsible for lining up the sponsorships while the committee pays the artists. Norrie mentioned the committee's small budget and a study they did last year to monitor attendance.
We just have a small budget with a limited budget for advertising as well. We did a study of how many people came last year. Appreciate those that come, but and the amount of people it takes to set up, and you need some of us there. So we just decided we're going to try it twice this year and then piggyback with what happens with Harmony.
CAO Matthew Grant explained how the committee's budget works.
As part of this effort, they are looking to expend a portion of their budget, as yet undisclosed, towards that effort. They do have $5,000 that has been budgeted through the town's municipal budget process. Should there be a desire for any further support from the town, that would come in the form of a recommendation from the committee to council for approval, such as staff time or other resources.
Councillors Angela Hicks and Dave Pinnell showed their support for live music in the area.
People can come by boat and sit and listen to the music.
I just think that any time that we can promote anything around our river, that natural beauty we have in this town, we have to utilize that much more than what we are, and I think we're on the right way. Come on in by boat, tie up and listen to it, and it's just great. So anytime that I can help promote that, I'm all for it.
Councillor Mike Shank was hopeful the event would be able to expand again in the future, noting public input.
I fully support what Bob and the Arts Committee, our advisory committee, is doing. I live so close, I'm right on the water along Highway 33 in Loyalist. They have a bath every weekend. They have, and it's very well attended there. So if it's very well attended here and it's a takeoff here, we can increase those dates. You know what I mean? Because I've had some phone calls where the same jumps, you know, well, why is there only two? Why can't there be five? Well, the committee is the one. I'm not part of that committee. I let the committee go through its process and go from there.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News.
This has been North Shore News and Interviews. If you have an idea for a story or want to create stories for this show, consider joining our 100% volunteer team. Contact Amherst Island Radio for more details.